So I had lots of things to think about this week related to the things I'm studying and conversations that I'm having with friends and different groups of people. And I was thinking about our world and how we've been talking about worldview and how our world, it's easy to look at our world as antagonistic toward God, rather than just being asleep to the things of God. And I think when it comes to the contrast for us of being awake to God, that's one of the core differences between a believer and an unbeliever, is that we're awake to God and the rest of the world is asleep, or at least in different phases of that sleep. And that makes me a little bit less, upset when I think about the things that men don't do right or they do to other people, which is really the thing that probably sets me off more than anything. And I just think about how when you're awake, you have hope. And when you're asleep, you don't even know that there is such a thing as hope, real hope. And what I love about the kingdom is I love that the kingdom brings hope. It brings, because it's a living thing, and we're going to talk about that a little bit today. The reason the kingdom does bring hope like nothing else on the earth is that the kingdom's alive. And in thinking about that, in my post this week, Bernie and I tried to find the right piece of artwork that, you know, reflected on being woven. I don't know if you know that. That's part of what the deal is for me in doing a post, is getting to pick out a piece of artwork that reflects something about that particular topic. And I just thought for a second, I'm interested in, for me, you know, I've never woven anything in my life, okay? So I've chosen the medium of being a weaver because of reasons that I've shared with you in the past, and that's something. The whole idea of a tapestry is helpful to me because of the process of the tapestry. And I've only actually seen several real tapestries on the backside and seen the mess that's on the backside. And that really struck me because, there's the front side, that's the beauty side that's being prepared, and then there's the mess side, there's the work side. And I have to remind myself all the time to make sure that I look at the scriptures and recognize that that's the finish side that's being put together, and that I'm on the mess side, and it's all going to come together, and the tapestry is going to be unveiled. And so for me, one of the best mediums for me to see God's beauty and majesty is that. I'm interested in what are the things that help you see God's beauty and majesty? I pick out tapestry and the whole idea of something being woven. How about you?
The things that unfold in nature.
Yeah. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it? I was sitting on a deer stand the other day taking pictures like I usually do, and I looked and I thought, there's a deer over there, and all of a sudden I realized it was a big cat, like a big cat. And I thought, oh my gosh, I think that's a mountain lion. And it was very large, and as I saw it moving through, I eventually saw its tail, and it had a bobtail on it. So I knew it was a bobcat. It was a big bobcat, but...
Was it a pig again?
Huh? Was it a pig again? It wasn't a pig. This is a different story. Hang in there with me, Daniel. Come on. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, all the years I've been out in the woods, I've never seen that before. And so what you're talking about is it's a cool thing to be in nature and to see some of those things unfold, even if it's a pig. Andre.
Along that same line, I was just telling Diana earlier that this past week I was walking out of the office and I was looking toward the south, walking toward my car in the parking lot, and as soon as I opened up the door and left the building, the sky this deep, deep red, and then sort of turning to an orange, and it spanned a pretty
Plus, you discipled someone there.
For me, it's just watching the ladies in this church and the moms take care of their kids and nurture each other. And to me, that's God at work, and that's the beauty that He's created, where they just desire to take care of each other.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Yeah. Cool. Delane. Because, you know, he was making fun of me earlier, so I'm going to choose you from the two-headed group there. Sure.
Like when I first met her, she's like, "Why are you always looking at the clouds?" She now really enjoys it too, but
right.
Mine's sky.
Sky, clouds are very close to each other, Sherry. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing when we were singing. I was thinking, what a beautiful part of my life that is, you know, whether it's pulse music or this worship music, that it draws that out of me. Good. Lori? Yeah, touches your heart. Yeah. Liz, do you feel that way about your kids?
Because
It's incredible. Rob, did you have something?
Yeah, I was thinking about just sound in general, because sound is vibrating air, end of story. But God takes that vibrating air and makes every single unique voice, every single unique instrument, and then takes them, and as we've been talking about, music allows them to function together to impact our hearts. How vibrating air? That's
yeah, and that's a great introduction to what I want to talk about. I was waiting for just the perfect thing, and that was the perfect thing. Because, you know, like it talks about in Peter, that we're being built up into a spiritual house. And we've talked about that before, how like we're living stones. And basically what that means is that those stones are vibrating with life. So I think there are a lot of things that point us to God, but the closer we get to the things that can't be captured by anything but a moment. They're not things like if you've ever, like you were talking about taking that picture of that the sun as you were coming out, and you'll look at it later and you go, that's really cool, but it doesn't compare at all to the moment that picture was there, you know. And when I think about God as a weaver, it's in any analogy really is that you have a tendency to look at it from the human example of it. But what I'm thinking about is God being a weaver vibrating with life, vibrating with light, vibrating with sound. That's what I think of when I think of God. So when I imagine God weaving the tapestry of life, I imagine him weaving something that's alive, okay? And so it's vibrating with life. And that's how I feel about the woven God story. You start pulling on one of those strands or whatever, and you start going, oh my gosh, this thing, it isn't just a matter of this is the truth. It's a matter of this thing's alive, and the life is coming out of it. And that's what I think about when I think about God being a weaver. And I want to look at a couple of passages related to that. This will be a quick Bible study here. Those of you, I'm noticing that people that have electronic devices can get there way faster than I can. So I've signed up to do a page-turning class this next fall to kind of work on those skills. Learning RX does that, so I'm going to take that particular opportunity. 10:38, John 10:38, and he's talking about the works of the Father. Verse 37, if I do not do the works of my Father, don't believe in me. But if I do them, though you do not believe in me, believe in the works, so that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I am in the Father. And so anything that God has woven through Jesus is coming from the Father. They're like, just as much as the Father created the heavens and the earth and created everything, Jesus was the creator of that. In fact, there are passages that talk about that. So that whole idea about weaving together what God is weaving together, what Jesus is weaving together, is completely consistent with what the Father is doing as a weaver. So that's one I thought. And turn over to John 14. These will all make sense, I'm sure, when we string them together. Chapter 14, verse 10. And these are all passages that talk about Jesus' relationship with the Father. Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words that I say to you, I don't speak on my own initiative, but the Father abiding in me does his works. So he's basically saying the weaving that you see me doing, it's the Father weaving through me. Now that's a really important concept, because if Jesus felt that way about his life and about his story, you know, what would be the implication for what spirituality looks like for us? Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. Otherwise, believe because of the works themselves. So what Jesus is weaving in life, you know, he's before all things and in him all things hold together, are totally tied in to who the Father is and what the Father does. Now, carrying on with the same author, turn over to 1 John, because each one of the disciples had different perspectives on different aspects of what they were learning from God because they had walked with God and seen God. 1 John 2:24, as for you, so, you know, he's been talking about his relationship with the Father and what happens between him and the Father. But John says, as for you, let that abide in you which you heard from the beginning. Well, what did they hear from the beginning? They heard that, you know, Jesus and the Father were like synonymous, that the work that the Son was doing was the work of the Father. If what you hear from the beginning abides in you, you will also abide in the Son and in the Father. So he's drawing us into that relationship in John's mind. It's that, you know, God is the weaver. His Son is actually doing the work of the weaving, I believe, including creation itself. And then we are being included in that same work as that work unfolds into our lives. So that's one aspect of God weaving, okay? I want to look at a second one. Turn over to Revelation. You know, if you find yourself, you know, saying that this is too much to follow, or you feel like, you know, you're getting a little sleepy or whatever, I always rely on that passage that says his great learning is driving him mad. And so I'll take that. You know, if you end up there, it's okay with me. This is an interesting concept. 1:8, I am the beginning and the end. Okay, Alpha, Omega, first letter of the Greek alphabet, last letter of the Greek alphabet. I am the Alpha and the Omega, says the Lord God. I am the one who is, who was, and who is to come, the Almighty. And that's who's doing the weaving. The one who has always been, the one who is, and the one who always will be. Now turn over to the end of the book of Revelation just to finish this thought. Revelation 21, verse 6. Then he said to me, it is finished. I am the Alpha and the Omega. And who else said it was finished? I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who is thirsty from the springs of water of life without cost. So once again, that whole idea of what's being woven together has been extended to us, and we're being drawn into that picture. And then turn over just another chapter to 22, verse 13. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. Blessed are those who wash their robes. So obviously important to know what that means, right? Blessed are those who wash their robes so that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter by the gates into the city. So what God is weaving isn't just a static story that doesn't have an ancient past and an occurring present and then an obvious finish or an obvious future. And what he's describing here is, I'm the beginning, the end. I'm the one who was. I'm the one who is. I'm the one who is to come. I am weaving together a story that will culminate and never end. It will never stop. You know, it's not like you're going to have to go to on your Kindle and find another book, because it's going to all be done. The author is going to be finished, but it's going to continue to write itself because it's alive. Go back over to Daniel. I know this is kind of like broad, and but stick with me on it. Daniel 7. See, you're already there, aren't you? Starting to feel insecure. Daniel 7, 9. I kept looking until thrones were set up. Now, this is obviously a vision, and Daniel had insight into the future. Thrones were set up. The Ancient of Days took his seat. His vesture was like white snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was ablaze with flames. Its wheels were burning fire. And a river of life was flowing and coming out before him. Thousands upon thousands were attending him, and myriads upon myriads were standing before him, and the court sat, and the books were open. Skip down to verse 13. I kept looking in these same night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, somebody mentioned that earlier, one like the Son of Man was coming. And he came up to the Ancient of Days, and he was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. And he goes on to describe that. So when you think about the tapestry that's being woven that you and I are a part of, and you're like one of these, like one of these living threads, and it's filled with like millions and even billions of threads, God's tapestry. And it's not just the soul part of it. There's just all of the beauty and the incredible wonder of what it means to be the creator God that he is. Turn over to 1 Corinthians 15. A little Bible study is almost done here. So. First Corinthians 15. And I mentioned this to you before, and it almost shocks my system when I read it. This is in the chapter about the resurrection. If you want to know almost everything God has to say about the resurrection from a teaching perspective, you find it in 1 Corinthians 15. Then comes the end. So he's describing how everything is going to come together, like we've just read in Revelation, and we've also read in Daniel. Then comes the end when he, Jesus, hands over the kingdom to the God and Father. Think about that. Jesus wins the kingdom. Once he has acquired the kingdom, he hands it over to God the Father. When he has abolished all rule and all authority and power. And he must reign until he has put all enemies under his feet, and the last enemy that will be abolished is death. So I wanted to have that little conversation right there, because when you talk about God being a weaver, he's a cosmic weaver. He's weaving beyond anything we can imagine. We get snapshots of it. We see it in people. We see it in nature. We see it in the sky. We get snapshots of what's being woven. But it's so far beyond our comprehension, even to imagine what it's going to be like for one who looks like the Son of Man to walk up to the Ancient of Days and to turn over the authority and the kingdom that he has won. And that's what we're a part of. So, you know, authority, the beauty, the humility that's there. So we search the God story to hear his voice and to know his mind and to know his heart. So I'd like you to kind of finish with like three other passages. John chapter 10. John 10, 25. Jesus answered them, "I told you, and you do not believe. The works that I do in my Father's name, these testify of me. But you do not believe because you are not of my sheep." And this is really interesting, and this is probably way more mind-blowing than we give it credit for. It's been in a lot of stained glass windows, and there's a lot of artwork been done about it. "My sheep hear my voice. I know them, and they follow me." So in this great tapestry that's being put together by God, this being woven by God, there's a personalness to us that, you know, we get glimpses of that. You know, Laura, you were talking about when you see a mom and their child, there are closenesses that we get to experience and that we get to see. And all that is indicative of who God is. "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. I give to them eternal life, and they will never, ever perish. And no one will snatch them out of my hand." Now that's security. That's, if you want to look for what is secure in this world, you can't get any more secure than that statement right there. "My Father who has given them to me is greater than all. And no one is able to snatch them out of the Father's hand." So God completes the circle. Jesus completes the circle. Even when we were at enmity with God and could not be accepted by God, God has covered us by his grace and allowed us to be restored into a relationship with the Father. And then he says, "I and the Father are one." And I don't know what kind of picture you're getting from these passages, but that oneness that God experiences with his Son, it's exactly the oneness that he's passed on to us. This is exactly the relationship that we experience and that we enjoy with God. Two more things on how the weaver weaves. Turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 6. I'm already there. Verse 4. Hear, O hear, Israel. The Lord is our God. The Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children. What do you think he meant when he said, Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. The Lord is one. Because, you know, there are many gods, right, in history. There are many gods right now. I mean, if you went through your neighborhood right now and had a God conversation and everybody filled out a God survey, you'd come up with a variety of gods, wouldn't you? Because there are many gods. It's the nature of the earth. It's the nature of humanity. But what is Israel being told? Hear, O hear, Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Turn over to Ephesians 4 with me. Therefore, I, the prisoner of the Lord, implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called. What is that call? Well, you know, Jesus has called us in the authority and the power and the acceptance of the Father. With all humility and gentleness and patience, showing tolerance for one another in love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. That's how we're supposed to live in light of who we really are. But check this out. There's one body, one spirit, just as also you were called in one hope. Okay, now think about this in the context of hear, O hear, Israel. The Lord our God, he is one. There's one body, one spirit, just as you were also called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all, and through all and in all. Now, I don't know if you see a real consistency, and this is why I've never understood why people think things are different in the Old Testament than they are in the New Testament. Of course, it's a different part of the story, but is the message any different? Hear, O hear, Israel, the Lord our God, he is one. And that's how the weaver is weaving. So, that made me think, and we're not going to look up these passages. These were just like little side thoughts that I had here. But I was thinking about that gift, the one woven gift that we receive from the weaver. First of all, our story and our destiny. Our story and our destinies are very individual, but they're very connected. What a beautiful thing that is. What a great God is able to weave together the stories. I was thinking about while we were singing today, and I probably mentioned this before, but I still try to imagine people from every nation under heaven. All standing before God and worshiping God. Tongues of men, tongues of angels. I mean, can you imagine? I have a tendency to think of it in terms of human tongues, but my goodness, what will happen when my mouth opens up when I'm in the heavenly kingdom? So story and destiny, that's part of what God is weaving us into. Second of all, soul and meaning. Bless the Lord, O my soul. He's trying to awaken sleeping souls, and he's trying to help souls understand what it is to have significance and to try to have meaning. And this is part of the weaving that God has done. He's not just finishing it so he can hang it up and say, look, I finished the tapestry. It's the vibration of life that's never going to end that the master of all things is involved with. Third thing in our woven gift is peace and glory. And I put those things together because if you can't see God's glory and if you can't see the future glory, how in the world can you and I have hope? Because the whole nature of life is to beat away at our hope and to suck hope out. But if we have an understanding of what true peace is, peace of soul, and if we understand that that is inseparably tied in with the glory of God that we're going to be a part of. Somebody talked about the clouds earlier. I think you did, Daniel. It says he will come with the clouds, not in the clouds, with the clouds. I'm sure there's going to be clouds there, but it's going to be the clouds of all of those, like it talks about in Hebrews 11, You know, all of the people, not just them, but like you and me that have responded to God in faith. And finally, in within this woven gift that God has given us, God has blessed us with hope and eternity, because the idea of never ending is a wonderful, wonderful thing. So one of my favorite passages about giving is found in 2 Corinthians 9. And so I just remind you, go ahead and give generously. It's always important. And if you'd like to, you know, put a little thing on your check and just say, hey, why don't you just send this to Dave? That would be fine. You know, I would really appreciate that. But there's this cool verse that ends up in this conversation on giving. And it's like, at the end of it, and it doesn't even kind of fit in with the argument. Just read through it if you get a chance to do that. He makes this astonishing statement. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. Now, I've always looked at that like, well, that's Jesus, of course. That's God's indescribable gift. But I think it's way more than Jesus, because in him, all things hold together. So everything that we just talked about, everything that we just looked at, is all part of that indescribable gift that's been given to the world, but it's also been given to us. And I don't know, I find that astonishing. I think about all the beauty and the things that unlock things in the world for me. But what I'm really grateful for is that I know a God who is big enough to take the mess side of the tapestry, and not get lost in what he's weaving, because I get lost so easily. I get so lost so easily, but God doesn't, because he is the master weaver. He's the master artist. He's the master intellect. He's the master mathematician. He's the master of everything. And that was good for my heart to think about that.